This is Jude Costello, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is The Week magazine. Netanyahu vows to defy Biden's Gaza red line. Israel pulled its ground troops from southern Gaza this week, raising questions about the future of the six-month-old war as the Biden administration stepped up its demands for a ceasefire. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the military was regrouping for an assault on Rafah, Hamas's last remaining stronghold in Gaza. Up to 1.4 million Palestinians, many of them displaced from elsewhere in Gaza, are crowded into the city, which is on the border with Egypt and is a hub for aid distribution. International opposition to a Rafah incursion runs strong and wide. President Biden has said it would cross a red line, but Netanyahu said an assault on Rafah was needed for a complete victory over Hamas. "There is no force in the world that will stop us," he added. The already tense relationship between Biden and Netanyahu deteriorated sharply following last week's accidental killing of seven humanitarian workers with the World Central Kitchen Aid Group, one of them a dual U.S.-Canadian national, in Israeli drone strikes. Following the attack, Biden had a pointed phone call with Netanyahu in which he demanded an immediate ceasefire and made clear that U.S. policy will hinge on immediate action to improve humanitarian conditions in Gaza, said the White House. Israel quickly said it would meet several Biden demands, including the opening of new aid routes into Gaza. But aid workers in northern Gaza warned of cascading famine, with some 1 million Palestinians facing catastrophic food insecurity. Doctors reported starving mothers being unable to breastfeed newborns. "It's hell on earth," said Umaya Kamash of the aid group Juzur. "Israel's pullback and aid concessions are welcome developments," said the Los Angeles Times, "but Gaza's devastation leaves little room for cheer. After Hamas slaughtered some 1,200 Israelis on October 7th, Israel had the support and sympathy of much of the world. But with 33,000 Palestinians reported dead and much of Gaza reduced to rubble, Israel has eroded that goodwill to the point where even staunch ally Biden is speaking out. If his demands are ignored, he must back up his words by requiring that Israel meet the same human rights standards as other nations receiving U.S. military aid. Biden is undermining our ally to pander to the anti-Israeli faction in his party," said the Wall Street Journal. "The killing of aid workers was horrific, but errors are a tragic and inevitable part of war. U.S. forces accidentally killed civilians in Afghanistan and Iraq. Biden knows that, but is using the tragedy to push Israel to cut short the war before it has eliminated an enemy bent on Israel's destruction and before it has freed the remaining 133 Israeli hostages. Palestinians returning to the southern city of Khan Yunis after the Israeli withdrawal found their home city unrecognizable," said Wafa Sharafa and Sami Magdi in the Associated Press. "They walked streets bulldozed down to the dirt, past stacks of rubble that were once blocks of apartments and businesses. Clambering over her collapsed home, a woman named Hanan said she had no words to describe the pain. Our memories, our dreams, our childhood, it's all gone. Will Rafah meet the same fate?" asked Sean Raymond in The Spectator. "Or is Netanyahu's vow to invade a bluff? He's squeezed between Biden and other world leaders who warn him to desist, and far-right members of his ruling coalition who insist on going on, and on whom his political survival now rests." "Biden's threats are no longer enough," said Andreas Kluth in Bloomberg. Even as he chided Netanyahu, his administration was preparing to send Israel more of the huge American bombs that have leveled Gaza. Biden has tried to empathize with all sides, supporting Israel's justified self-defense while urging humanitarian restraint. But his tightrope walk failed as Netanyahu repeatedly and brazenly snubbed and ignored him, and he's losing support at home and credibility abroad. If Netanyahu fails to implement a ceasefire, we must immediately halt all shipments of arms. Netanyahu must go, said Brett Stevens in the New York Times. After 6 months of war, Hamas is not defeated, and Israel's international reputation is in tatters. He's brought far-right rabble-rousers into his government and has given them key security positions and lost the trust and support of Israelis, 71% of whom want him gone. Israel cannot afford to lose this war, but it needs to lose a leader who isn't winning it. It wasn't all bad. Donna Jean Wilde, a 58-year-old Canadian retired high school vice principal, recently set a new record for planking, holding the rigid position for 4 hours, 30 minutes, and 11 seconds. Wilde, a mother of 5 and grandmother of 12, started planking 12 years ago after a wrist injury left her in a cast, making her regular exercise routine impossible. She completed the feat at the high school where she used to work. After the first 2 hours, her elbow started to hurt intensely. Thinking of her grandchildren helped her persevere. "It feels like a dream," she said of her feat. In 1982, West German Chancellor Helmut Schmidt gave then-President Ronald Reagan a unique gift, a bald eagle named Captain. The bird went to a breeding sanctuary in Valley Park, Missouri, and became part of a successful initiative to revive the species. Captain fathered 6 eaglets that were released into the wild, plus Clark, whose foot deformity meant he could not survive on his own. Clark became an ambassador for the formerly endangered species. He now takes about 6 flights a year, touring the country with his handler, Daniel Cohn, for demonstrations that include flying between 2 trainers to the tune of the Star Spangled Banner. "Clark has got such a big personality," Cohn said. "He's curious. He can be sassy." Harrison Johnson, an 11-year-old from North Carolina, has collected over $92,000 for Pacific Historic Parks, a nonprofit organization that supports sites like the Pearl Harbor National Memorial. Johnson learned about the attack after working on a project when he was in the 3rd grade, and during his research, he visited the Pearl Harbor Memorial in Oahu with his mother. The boy soon embarked on a mission to get $100,000 to promote Pearl Harbor awareness. His success has stunned adults. "You don't see children these days who are that engaged and passionate about history," said Aileen Utterdyke, CEO of Pacific Historic Parks. Turmoil in Arizona over revived 1864 abortion ban. Arizona's Supreme Court this week upheld a 160-year-old abortion ban, threatening to upend the swing state's presidential and Senate races. In a 4-2 decision, the court ruled that without a federal right to abortion, the 1864 law could be enforced. It forbids abortion from the moment of conception with an exception for life-threatening emergencies. After the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, state lawmakers on both sides of the issue sought to clarify whether the Civil War-era ban superseded a 15-week ban enacted in 2022. A lower court ruled that it didn't, but the higher court disagreed. The ruling was placed on hold for 14 days and will go into effect after a 45-day wait. Democratic Attorney General Chris Mays said no one would be prosecuted under the draconian law. Republican Senate candidate Carrie Lake, who once backed the 1864 law, said it out of step with Arizonans, but Republicans in the state legislature blocked an effort to repeal it. The Arizona ruling came just a day after Trump tried to defang abortion as an election issue by saying he would leave abortion policy up to the states. "We have taken the abortion issue largely out of play," he wrote on social media. But following the Arizona decision, Trump said the ban went too far, predicting the state's Democratic governor would bring it back into reason. Trump's statements angered many of his allies on the religious right. "This cedes the national debate to the Democrats," said Susan B. Anthony, pro-life American President Marjorie Dannenfelser. "Arizona is a warning," said Dahlia Lithwick and Mark Joseph Stern in Slate. "Its court restricted a zombie ban, and national anti-abortion activists hope to do the same with the 1873 Comstock Act, which outlawed transporting drugs or supplies used for abortions. Arizonans will vote on a constitutional amendment guaranteeing abortion rights in November, so this ruling could be short-lived. But the right's efforts to return to the Victorian age could be every state's future if Trump wins. So much for taking the issue of abortion out of play for the 2024 election," said Stephen Collinson in CNN.com. With its ruling, Arizona's high court managed to disprove Trump's claim and blow up his plans. Trump has tried to finesse his abortion stand because any national ban is broadly unpopular, but if Arizona is any sign of what unfolds when abortion is left to the states, his efforts at damage control look very fragile. "Trump's stance is designed to look almost moderate," said Jamel Bowie in the New York Times, "but his position is a strikingly conservative departure from mainstream thinking. Almost two-thirds of Americans support legal abortion in most cases. He knows Republicans are dangerously vulnerable on abortion and wants to neutralize the issue. But this is the man who gave the Supreme Court the majority that overturned Roe. If he's reelected, his allies will do everything in their power to ban abortion nationwide." Israel failing to protect civilians and aid workers in Gaza? "With this, the world has had enough," said Jennifer Rubin in the Washington Post. On April 1st, at around 11 p.m., seven humanitarian workers with World Central Kitchen, the nonprofit founded by celebrity chef Jose Andres, set off in a convoy after unloading aid at a Gaza warehouse. They drove along a coastal road designated safe by Israel's military in three vehicles clearly labeled with the group's insignia. By 11:15 p.m., all seven, three British citizens, one U.S.-Canadian dual national, a Palestinian, a Pole, and an Australian, were dead, killed by three missiles fired from an Israeli drone. President Biden's frustration with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been building for months, but it was this strike that exhausted the patience of arguably the most pro-Zionist U.S. president in history. In a blunt public statement, Biden said Israel has not done enough to protect aid workers or civilians, and reportedly told Netanyahu that the U.S. won't be able to support you without a change of approach in Gaza. Netanyahu issued a rare apology for what he called a tragic incident, said Emily Tamkin in Slate. But apologies won't bring back the dead or change the reality that Israel is now killing foreign nationals for trying to keep Palestinians from starving to death. "That's a malicious distortion of truth," said Arson Ostrovsky and John Spencer in Newsweek. An investigation is underway, and a preliminary inquiry by the Israeli military has detailed the errors behind this profound tragedy. IDF officers failed to review documents about the convoy. The car's logos couldn't be seen in the dark. And a drone operator mistook an aid worker carrying a bag for an armed militant. Two officers have been dismissed. Can any sane observer doubt this was an accident? Unlike Hamas, which slaughtered Israeli civilians en masse and on purpose on October 7th, Israel has gone to unprecedented lengths to protect Gaza's civilians, even warning them of bombing raids. Why would this same nation invite international outrage by intentionally killing aid workers? Accidents can still be war crimes, said Amanda Taub in the New York Times, and Israel's own account of this strike raises significant legal questions. International law requires militaries to refrain from deadly force if there's any question about a target's identity. And by Israel's own rules of engagement, a single armed militant wouldn't justify blowing up three separate vehicles. Those rules of engagement seem looser than ever, if they are followed at all, said Peter Beaumont in The Guardian. At least 203 humanitarian workers have been killed in the Gaza war, according to USAID, as have more than 33,000 Palestinians, most of them women and children, according to the Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry. Whatever the IDF says, it's getting harder to dismiss reports that some units and commanders are essentially doing what they want when it comes to targeting. Israel has major questions to answer, said Tom Rogan in the Washington Examiner, for strategic as well as moral reasons. Netanyahu's apology for the attack, which included the shrugging caveat that such things happen in wartime, struck the wrong tone at this pivotal moment. With the IDF about to launch a bloody offensive on Hamas's last major redoubt in Rafah, Israel needs all the global support it can get. That not only requires a credible investigation of the World Central Kitchen strike, but also letting more aid into Gaza overall. If not, and even if unfairly, Israel's access to U.S. weapons and diplomatic cover will be at risk. Only in America. An Oklahoma appeals court judge says corrections officers need to suck it up and maintain the state's brisk schedule of executions. Oklahoma's attorney general had asked for a slowdown to help corrections officers deal with the trauma of administering the death penalty, but Judge Gary Lumpkin dismissed these concerns and called on staff to man up. If you can't do the work, he said, step aside and let somebody do it that can. As part of a mandatory course on structural racism, first-year medical students at the University of California, Los Angeles were made to attend a lecture by a self-declared visionary who demanded they chant Free Palestine and kneel to Mama Earth. Guest speaker Lisa Tiny Gray Garcia also blasted modern medicine as white science and denounced the occupation of Turtle Island, meaning the U.S. It was crazy, said an attendee. It was a good week for steady hands after a magnitude 4.8 earthquake struck the East Coast just as Justin Allen of Horsham, Pennsylvania, was undergoing a vasectomy. It mostly felt like a brief speed bump, says Allen, adding that his surgeon sensibly decided to put the tools down for a moment. It was a good week for blisters after British endurance athlete Russ Cook, 27, completed his epic south-north run along the length of Africa. The 10,000-mile trot took Cook 352 days, 112 more than planned, and he confessed to reporters that, "I'm a little bit tired." It was a good week for getting noticed after a German museum fired an employee who secretly hung his own painting alongside works by Dalí and Picasso. Police said the man had hoped to achieve an artistic breakthrough. It was a bad week for free will after Turning Point USA head and mega influencer Charlie Kirk claimed that the use of birth control pills really screws up female brains, leading to very angry and bitter young ladies who vent their resentment by voting for the Democrat Party. It was a bad week for youth after a McKinsey report identified groceries as the spending category in which millennials and Gen Zers are most likely to splurge. Previous, less responsible generations were known to fritter away disposable income on restaurants and foreign travel. It was a bad week for salad after Tennessee's state senate passed a bill to tackle the non-existent scourge of vaccine lettuce. GOP State Senator Frank Nicely said scientists were secretly plotting to mass medicate the population like they do with fluoride in the water. East Palestine, Ohio. Residents learned this week they would receive $600 million in payments from Norfolk Southern a year after dozens of freight train cars carrying hazardous materials derailed, triggering an environmental disaster. For days after the derailment, Norfolk burned vinyl chloride to prevent the cars from exploding. The black billows of hazardous fumes forced many residents to evacuate and killed tens of thousands of animals. An estimated 100,000 people filed class action claims against Norfolk. Some have lost income. Others claim their tap water still isn't potable. This week's settlement, which Norfolk said is designed to provide finality, offers payment to anyone with a claim who lived within 20 miles of the train derailment. In addition, Norfolk will cover personal injury claims for residents within a 10-mile radius. Lawyers representing the class action plaintiffs called it a fair result, indicating they would approve the terms by next week. White House Station, New Jersey. Tremors, a magnitude 4.8 earthquake, shook a huge swath of the East Coast last week. The quake, the strongest in 240 years, originated 40 miles west of New York City, but rumbles were felt from Pennsylvania to Maine. Aftershocks followed throughout the day. No casualties were reported, but air and ground traffic suffered delays. New York's John F. Kennedy International and New Jersey's Newark Liberty Airport halted departures for up to 2 hours. Geologists said compounded stress on a tectonic plate's fault line caused the quake, but they still aren't sure exactly which fault line is to blame. It likely occurred on an unnamed fault, but we really don't know. It's hard to figure that out, said Dara Goldberg, a geophysicist with the U.S. Geological Survey. The survey now predicts a 39% chance that another earthquake, magnitude 3 or above, will rattle the region within the next year. Washington, D.C., immunity claims. Jack Smith, the special counsel prosecuting Donald Trump for his efforts to overturn the 2020 election, urged the Supreme Court this week to dismiss the former president's claims of immunity. Trump appealed to the high court in February after a D.C. circuit court rejected his first claim that his actions in 2020 were official acts carried out by a president and were shielded from prosecutorial scrutiny. The Supreme Court decided it would hear Trump's argument on April 25th, delaying a criminal trial in which he faces 4 felony charges. In his brief this week, Smith reminded the court that a bedrock principle of our constitutional order is that no person is above the law and that the absence of any prosecutions of former presidents doesn't validate Trump's immunity claim, but instead underscores the unprecedented nature of petitioners' alleged conduct. 19 former military and national security officials also filed a brief supporting Smith's plea. Strasbourg, France, climate as human rights issue. The European Court of Human Rights ruled this week that Switzerland's failure to cut greenhouse gases had violated its citizens' rights, a landmark decision that could open the door to litigation across the EU. The plaintiffs, 2,000 Swiss women, mostly in their 70s, argued that their government had endangered the last decades of their lives by not doing enough to fight climate change because elderly women are most at risk of heat-related deaths. It's the first time an international court has made a ruling on the obligations of a government in the face of the climate crisis. This is only the beginning, said Swedish activist Greta Thunberg outside the court. More and more people are taking their governments to court to hold them accountable. Kigali, Rwanda, the world sat by. Rwandan President Paul Kagame this week blamed the international community for not intervening to prevent the 1994 Rwandan genocide when ethnic Hutu extremists slaughtered minority Tutsis, killing 800,000 people in 3 months. The 30th anniversary remembrance ceremonies were attended by dozens of foreign dignitaries, including Bill Clinton, who was U.S. president at the time and has since expressed regret for not responding quickly enough. At the ceremony, Kagame said the international community failed us all, whether from contempt or cowardice. Afterward, he criticized the current U.S. administration as well. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's message had mourned the many thousands of Tutsis, Hutus, Twas, and others whose lives were lost, and Kagame said that was a failure to acknowledge that the genocide victims were overwhelmingly Tutsi. Grozny, Russia. Western music banned. The Russian Republic of Chechnya have banned all music that is either too fast or too slow. Chechen Culture Minister Musa Dadayev said last week that all music, vocal, and choreographic compositions must have a tempo between 80 and 160 beats per minute, in keeping with Chechen musical tradition. The directive, part of a government campaign to suppress Western influences in the conservative, mostly Muslim region of 1.4 million people, effectively outlaws most pop, including global mega hits like Taylor Swift's upbeat Shake It Off, 160 beats per minute, and Drake's meandering God's Plan, 77 beats per minute. Borrowing musical culture from other peoples is inadmissible, Dadayev said. Local musicians have until June 1st to rewrite any offending tunes. Apatow's Comedy Awakening. Judd Apatow no longer thinks that comedy can change hearts and minds, said Jesse David Fox in New York Magazine. Back in 2004, the writer and director of The 40-Year-Old Virgin and Knocked Up was certain that Daily Show host Jon Stewart's acerbic commentary on the Iraq War would doom President George W. Bush's 2004 re-election bid. Jon was laying out some of the facts so clearly that there was no way Bush was going to get reelected because the comedy was really vicious and accurate and right on the money, says Apatow, 56. Then he won the election. At that moment, I went, oh, it will never change it. He credits comedian Samantha Bee with setting him right on the limits of political humor. The purpose is to say to people who are like-minded, you're not crazy for feeling the way you feel. I don't think there are hardcore Republicans watching a new Jon Stewart bit going, now I get it. But Apatow is still searching for comedy everywhere, even in his doses of Ozempic. My goal was to outrun Ozempic and prove that you can gain weight on this thing, he says. I was almost offended at the idea that a drug could make me lose weight. My low self-esteem, which is sedated by food, cannot be stopped by your silly injection. Besides, he jokes, it doesn't work at all. I look terrible. Why Hall embraced the monster movie. Rebecca Hall regrets being a movie snob, said Thessaly LaForce in the New York Times. Best known for artsy films like Woody Allen's Vicky Cristina Barcelona, 2008, and Christine, 2016, the British actress overthought every move when she was starting out, once scolding her agent for sending her to auditions for big-budget films. I wrote a letter at the time saying, I want to do interesting independent films. I'm not a conventional movie star, and how dare you, says Hall, the daughter of Royal Shakespeare Company founder Sir Peter Hall. I mean, I was probably nicer than that, but the gist of it was, I wish for you to conceive of me as something other than what you're conceiving me. But now that she's starring in a genuine blockbuster, Godzilla X Kong, the new empire. The 41-year-old sees these early decisions differently. By turning down big movies, Hall missed opportunities in small character-driven ones, too. As cool and righteous as it sounds, I think it was an error, she admits. The more of those big jobs that I would have done in my 20s, the more access I would have had to other work. It was also incredibly arrogant to assume that all those films were unworthy. Appearing in big crowd pleasers gives her the financial freedom to make smaller films. But, she adds, it's not just a cynical move. There's also a huge amount of fun in it. Angelina Jolie last week urged a Los Angeles court to force her ex-husband, Brad Pitt, to present documents that her legal team alleges will prove years of abuse by Pitt. In a motion, Jolie's attorney accused Pitt of unrelenting efforts to control and financially drain Jolie and attempting to hide his history of abuse, control, and cover-up by leveraging an expansive non-disclosure agreement between the couple. It's the latest development in a two-year legal dispute stemming from Jolie's 2021 sale of her portion of Chateau Miravalle, a French winery the Hollywood stars purchased together in 2008. Jolie now alleges that the broad NDA concealed Pitt's abuse of her and their six children. Rising movie star Jonathan Majors was this week sentenced to a year of domestic violence counseling for assaulting his ex-girlfriend, British actress Grace Jabari. In December, a jury found Majors, 34, guilty of assaulting and harassing Jabari, 31, during a night out in New York City. Security cameras captured Majors grabbing Jabari and trying to shove her back into an SUV after what Jabari testified was an argument over messages on his phone. Jabari said Majors broke one of her fingers during the incident. Prosecutors said the incident was the culmination of a year of abuse. Majors' career tanked after the assault. Marvel Studios, which had cast Majors as a supervillain, ended its relationship with him, and Searchlight Pictures pulled the release of Magazine Dreams, a film he headlined. His lawyers said this week that Majors, who maintains his innocence and plans to appeal, is committed to growing and bettering himself. Country singer Morgan Wallen landed behind bars this week after he apparently tossed a chair six stories off the rooftop of a bar in downtown Nashville. It crashed just 3 feet from two police officers. Onlookers filmed officers handcuffing Wallen, 30, outside the bar, pressing him into their police cruiser and escorting him to jail, where he was later released on a $15,000 bond. After a meteoric rise in 2023, his One Thing at a Time ranked as the year's most popular album, the Tennessee native announced plans to open a six-story music bar on Nashville's tourist-packed Broadway. He has now been arrested twice on that very street, once in 2020 for public intoxication, and again this week for reckless endangerment and disorderly conduct. Sotomayor's obligation to liberalism. Justice Sonia Sotomayor is the greatest liberal to sit on the Supreme Court in my adult lifetime, said Mehdi Hassan, but she needs to retire now. The court's first Latina justice has proven herself a bracing, cathartic, dissenting voice against its six-justice conservative supermajority. But she should not repeat the catastrophic mistake made by another liberal folk hero, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. After being diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in 2009, Ginsburg stubbornly resisted calls for her to step down. Ginsburg died in 2020, and President Donald Trump and a Republican-controlled Senate immediately installed the conservative Amy Coney Barrett in her place, enabling court conservatives to overturn Roe. Sotomayor, 70, has type 1 diabetes and travels with a medic. If Trump wins and she doesn't survive his term, he will replace her with a far-right Federalist Society apparatchik, and a 7-2 court will be even more aggressively radical. Even if Biden wins re-election, the GOP is expected to gain control of the Senate and will likely block him from replacing Sotomayor through 2028. It might seem callous to pressure Sotomayor to step down from a job she loves, but for her to risk her seat is nothing short of insane. It must be true. I read it in the tabloids. A tanker truck carrying 102,000 juvenile salmon bound for Oregon's Imnaha River crashed and flipped over en route, but miraculously landed next to a creek into which most of the salmon escaped. About 77,000 smolts made it into the creek, said the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. The fish, part of an effort to replenish local salmon populations, are expected to survive and eventually reach the Pacific Ocean. Salmon are very resilient, said hatcheries expert Seth White. A Eugene, Oregon man barely escaped a gruesome ending when a runaway 4-foot circular saw blade raced through a parking lot and slammed into a convenience store a split second after he'd gone inside. I was shaking, said Shane Reimke. That thing was huge. The blade had come loose from a nearby construction site, and just after Reimke went through the door of the store, the blade slammed into the storefront, embedding itself 2 feet deep. Obviously, it wasn't my time, Reimke said, adding, I need a beer. An Indian man, dubbed the Elections King for running in and losing 238 elections, is embarking on his 239th campaign for a parliamentary seat. For the past 36 years, K. Padmarajan, a 65-year-old who runs a tire repair shop, has run for office from the local council to the presidency. All candidates seek victory in elections. Not me, said Padmarajan. He said his goal is to model perseverance and graciousness in defeat. If he wins this latest race, he said, I will have a heart attack. Abortion mistake is inexcusable. In a heartbreaking hospital mix-up, Czech doctors recently performed an abortion on the wrong woman, said Martin Caban. The debacle occurred last month at Prague's Bulovka University Hospital, where staff confused two patients of Asian descent who spoke little Czech, one scheduled for a regular pregnancy checkup at 4 months along, and the other for a dilation and curettage procedure used in abortion and as a diagnostic tool. When staff called for the DNC patient in the waiting room, the other woman misunderstood and responded to a stranger's name. A nurse reviewed the paperwork with her, but we now know the patient couldn't understand the document. Doctors only realized something was really wrong during the operation when they spotted amniotic fluid. How could such an atrocious mistake happen? Why didn't anyone check the woman's ID wristband? Was she even wearing one? The alarming truth is we don't actually know how often medical mistakes like this occur. We have absolutely no reliable data because Czech hospitals aren't required to report their errors. Police are investigating this case as a crime. Yet this isn't a failure of an individual nurse, but a failure of the entire process. The credibility of the Czech healthcare system demands that we put in place new safeguards in all our hospitals. The doctor who wrote a medical report released by Donald Trump's campaign attesting to his excellent health with exceptional cognitive ability is a longtime member of Trump's golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey. The doctor, osteopath Bruce A. Ehrenwald, declined to answer questions about his report, which consisted only of 3 short paragraphs with no numerical data or other specifics, the Washington Post. An extremely active Atlantic hurricane season lies ahead starting June 1st, due in part to abnormally warm sea surface temperatures, say forecasters at Colorado State University. They predict 5 major hurricanes, 11 total hurricanes, and 23 named storms, compared with 7 total hurricanes and 14 named storms in an average season. Reuters. Americans spent more than $100 billion on lotteries in 45 states and the District of Columbia last year, a haul that combined would make U.S. lotteries the country's 9th most profitable company. The poorest 1% of households spent an average of $600 a year on lotteries, a share of their income 30 times greater than that spent by the richest households, The Economist. Only 70% of mail intended to be delivered by the U.S. Postal Service within 3 to 5 days arrived on time last year, an 11% drop from 2022. A $40 billion overhaul of the system ordered by Postmaster General Louis DeJoy has caused widespread disruptions, and state and federal officials are voicing concerns about the possible impact on mail-in ballots in the 2024 election. NBCNews.com. Basketball, the Caitlin Clark effect. Caitlin Clark's college career came to an end without a national title, said Jack Maloney in CBSSports.com, but her legacy is secure. A dominant South Carolina squad beat Clark's Iowa team 87-75 in the women's NCAA title game this week. But the 30 points Clark scored in her final collegiate game lifted her career points total to 3,951, making her the all-time leading scorer in NCAA Division I history, men or women. The star Hawkeye guard, whose skill at deep three-pointers, precision passing, and trash-talking have made her a media sensation, also boasts the women's single-season scoring record, 1,234 points, and has more career points in the NCAA tournament, 392, than any other woman. Clark is a major reason why women's basketball has exploded, said Amy Bass in CNN.com. Viewership figures for NCAA March Madness women's games zoomed past those for the men's and for the NBA, and the final drew 18.7 million viewers, the highest number for any basketball game of any kind since 2019. For the sport itself, this tournament had no losers. The NCAA deserves none of the credit, said Sally Jenkins in the Washington Post. Women's March Madness was marred by countless amateur hour errors. The court used for the Sweet 16 games had one of its three-point lines drawn 9 inches short. University of Utah players were housed in an infamously white nationalist-infested part of Idaho, where they were accosted by revving pickup truckers yelling racial slurs. The NCAA has made some improvements since a 2021 legal review revealed how badly the organization second-classed the women's event. But women's programs still get no cut of tournament revenue, while men's receive millions of dollars from the NCAA. If things don't change after this blockbuster March Madness, women's basketball coaches and athletic directors should do what football did when it deemed the NCAA commercially incompetent and restrictive: bolt the organization entirely. Yes, progress has been slow, said Nancy Armour in USA Today, but the Clark tsunami should help wash away the old order. Her proven ability to sell out arenas and shatter records will silence the tired cries that no one cares about women's sports. After graduation, Clark will be off to the WNBA as the presumptive top overall draft pick, and little girls will want to wear her jersey, as will little boys who will now never know a time when this wasn't the norm. The long overdue respect for women's sports that Clark has helped generate will resonate long after she is done competing. The eclipse, a moment of collective awe. As the moon slid across the sun and darkened the day, Americans were reminded of our planet's place in the cosmos, said Michael Rosten and Bill Spiegel in the New York Times. From Mexico's Pacific coast to Newfoundland, millions donned protective glasses to witness the first total eclipse visible in North America in 7 years. When the sun and moon merged into a single black disk ringed by fire, the temperature dropped and our world was plunged into an eerie, unearthly twilight for roughly 4 minutes. Over 30 million Americans live in the path of totality, and about 3.7 million more traveled to reach it. Hundreds of millions saw a partial eclipse with a sliver of sun not covered. Cheyenne Davis, who traveled to see the last total eclipse in 2017, was no less overwhelmed by seeing this one in Illinois. "I was not prepared for the awe that came with it," she said. "Eclipses are the product of a wondrous coincidence," said Sabine Stanley in the Washington Post. "The sun is a ball of gas 870,000 miles wide, and it's 93 million miles away from us. The moon is just 2,100 miles wide, and it's 240,000 miles away. But it's positioned exactly in the right place to neatly cover the sun when their orbits periodically align. If the sun were a bit bigger or closer, or if the moon were a bit smaller or farther, totality would not occur. In the ancient world," said Jason Colavito in CNN.com, "eclipses were believed to be evil portents and sparked fear because they seemed to happen at random. But in a triumph of science over ignorance, we now know why they occur and how to predict them years and decades in advance. The next total eclipse won't arrive in the U.S. until 2044. "What a show this one was," said Jason Gay in the Wall Street Journal. "This was a celestial Super Bowl, outdoors, available to anyone, without commercials, a collective, authentic human experience that briefly transcended all our differences. Some viewers wept, but I was too awestruck to cry. As the show concluded, I heard people clapping and laughing. It was the sound of joy, no subscription required. What a world it can be when it still surprises you." Wit and wisdom. Good artists copy, great artists steal, according to Pablo Picasso, quoted in the Daily Express UK. The party told you to reject the evidence of your eyes and ears. It was their final, most essential command, per George Orwell, quoted in the Washington Post. The experience of a trembling, wobbling motion of everything we rely on for our sense of direction and reality is among the most common and most vivid experiences of totalitarian rule, according to Hannah Arendt, quoted in Lithub. "Ultimately, man should not ask what the meaning of his life is, but rather must recognize that it is he who is asked," according to Viktor Frankl, quoted in Medium.com. "A terrorist is a man with a small gun. A statesman is a man with a large gun," according to Irish writer Brendan Behan, quoted in NB Media Co-op, Canada. "If you want something said, ask a man. If you want something done, ask a woman," according to Margaret Thatcher, quoted in Yahoo News. "Don't ask the barber whether you need a haircut," according to Warren Buffett, quoted in the Financial Times. Growing a liver from a lymph node. In a groundbreaking experiment, scientists are attempting to grow a new liver inside a patient with liver failure. The procedure, developed by Pittsburgh-based biotech company Ligenesis, involves the injection of liver cells into hepatocytes into the patient's abdominal lymph nodes. The liver is the only organ capable of rebuilding itself, and in previous experiments in pigs, introducing donor cells allowed animals with damaged organs to develop mini livers with networks of blood vessels and bile ducts that exhibited at least some vital functions. For the first human trial, begun last month, Doctors threaded a small tube with a camera down the patient's throat into the digestive tract, then used ultrasound to identify the targeted lymph nodes and inject them with 50 million hepatocytes. We're using the lymph node as a living bioreactor, Ligenesis CEO Michael Hufford tells Wired. The mini liver isn't expected to take over all the functions of an original liver, and recipients would have to take immunosuppressant drugs for the rest of their lives. Still, if the procedure works, it could be life-saving for many patients. The U.S. liver transplant list is around 10,000 patients long, and 12% of those waitlisted die each year. The new treatment would use donated livers that couldn't be matched with a compatible patient. Since the procedure only uses a small amount of material, up to 75 people could be treated with each donor organ. Novel of the Week, Clear by Karis Davies. Karis Davies still feels undersung, at least on American shores, said Joan Frank in the Washington Post. Fortunately, the Welsh author's splendidly imagined third novel should galvanize American readers to catch up. In Clear, the year is 1843, and John, a flat-broke minister, has been hired by a wealthy family to travel to a remote Scottish island and evict its sole resident, Ivar, a tenant farmer who speaks only a nearly extinct language. Every scene is imbued with austere beauty, and after John suffers a fall and Ivar saves his life, John struggles to reveal the purpose of his visit while learning Ivar's language and growing closer to his rescuer. Though the book's plot is simple, the storytelling is sophisticated and playful, said Sarah Moss in the New York Times. Davies leaps around in time to capture the perspectives of Ivar, John, and John's wife, who eventually comes searching for her missing husband. Though Clear's ending is unconvincing, you'll thoroughly enjoy the novel if you like wild writing and high-stakes thinking in small, polished form. Jelly Roll Blues by Elijah Wald. This isn't a book for the faint-hearted, said David Kirby in the Wall Street Journal. A magnificent, raunchy exploration of early blues lyrics, it features lines so scabrous they would make a pirate weep. Music historian Elijah Wald doesn't blanch. He wants readers to remember the genre as it truly was. Yes, the songs are dirty, says Wald, but if you're a sharecropper or a sex worker or a musician who got stiffed by a saloon keeper and has to sleep in a field, dirt is everywhere. Review of films. The Beast, directed by Bertrand Bonello. Not just a densely packed art movie, the latest mind-bender from French director Bertrand Bonello might be the most potent horror picture of the decade so far, said Glenn Kenny in RogerEbert.com. Léa Seydoux and George MacKay co-star as thwarted lovers in three separate settings, 1910 Paris, 2014 Los Angeles, and 2044 Paris. Like the main character in Henry James's short story, The Beast in the Jungle, Seydoux's Gabrielle confesses a fear of impending catastrophe, which proves as prescient in 1910 as it does in her later incarnations. What's most terrifying, though, is that the beast she fears isn't in the jungle. It is us. The Gabrielle of 2044 has decided she'll be a better fit in her AI-dominated society by undergoing a procedure that erases past traumas, said Zachary Barnes in the Wall Street Journal. As we relive those traumas, including a 2014 incident in which MacKay's Lewis manifests a violent, vengeful incel, Seydoux gives a performance of astonishing chameleonic intensity. Whether she's lustful, terrified, or emotionally drained, we can't stop watching her. Narrative digressions sometimes undermine the movie's Lynchian surrealism and time-jumping adventurousness, said Tim Grierson in the Los Angeles Times. You also may be unsure in the end how to define the titular beast. Bonello's film, however, ultimately proposes a troubling answer that the beast is our fear of feeling too deeply, and to avoid emotional jeopardy, we end up destroying ourselves. Employment, strong showing for labor as U.S. adds jobs. Last month's jobs report was as good as it gets, said Neil Irwin in Axios. The Labor Department said last week that employers added 303,000 jobs in March, the strongest gain in 10 months. That robust job growth coincided with a healthy rate of wage growth, 0.3%, but nothing too crazy. That's because of a surge in the labor supply. About 469,000 people started working or looking for work in March, either due to immigration or just more people coming off the sidelines. The combination of job openings and labor force growth is pretty much an ideal situation for workers and employers. This is Jude Costello, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona.